show and the Love Is podcast. I'm excited to welcome the host of the Love Is podcast, Kim Sorrell. Kim, how are you? I know you're excited about our guest.
I'm doing great. Thank you, Neil. And I am excited about our guest, Dr. Brian Boxer Wachler. You are a pioneer. You're an innovator, one of the top six medical innovators of our time or something like that. You do so much. You got a nonprofit. You rescued a dog. You've got twins. I mean, you just have done so much. But in eye surgery, in the area of eyes, you've helped so many people and then trained other doctors to do the same and help so many people. So I first of all want to thank you for all the work that you've done. And I want to welcome you to the show.
Well, you're very welcome. And thanks for those really nice compliments. And it's a pleasure to be here, of course.
Wow. Before I start, you know, so we had last time you were on, you're the social media addict. Tell Kim about the book you wrote before so that she knows more about why I keep calling you the social media addict.
So back during the pandemic, I had so much extra time on my hands, and my twin daughters were just early teenagers at the time. And they're like, hey, Dad, you should get on TikTok. There's some really good doctors giving good information. And so I did. And I just found myself literally falling down that hole and just being so overwhelmed with the success of, you know, getting more followers and more followers and more success and viral videos that I ended up, even though I grew to over 3 million followers, I actually didn't realize it, but I became addicted to TikTok, literally, and wasn't even aware of it until my family had a TikTok intervention with me, basically. And then I got over that, got clarity, got regrounded in the social media world, and eventually wrote a book about that and my cautionary tale and also tips for, you know, people and parents who have kids on social media to help guide them with what I learned and what research has shown.
Yeah, well, I looked at your TikTok and you still have 3.4 million viewers on your TikTok. So if you ever wanted to give a little piece of advice without the addiction, I'm sure people would be happy to see it. But yeah, it's crazy when you go down that rabbit hole. But so you became a doctor. Was it always a lifelong dream? Like, were you always fascinated with the eyes? Like, how did you pick your career?
So it kind of came in phases. I was always really into using my hands as a little kid. And I'd like to make those old models, you know, where you'd buy them and the plastic pieces you'd glue together and, you know, put the decals on and paint them. And I also played piano. And I remember my dad said, you know, you have the hands of a surgeon. And it got me thinking. And then I have an uncle who at the time was a pioneering urology surgeon for children, pediatrics. So I had somebody as a bit of a mentor to look up to along that process. So that was sort of my path to becoming a doctor. And then for eyes, it was just a random occurrence during medical school when one of my senior friends, a year older than me, said, hey, what are you doing over the summer? And I'm a first year medical student. I'm like, you know, growing up in Southern California, saying, well, I think I may go back and try some surfing or something. She says, well, if you like ophthalmology, you know, it's a hard field to get into, but you should do some research, see if you like it, because that'll help. So I took her advice and I started doing research with a doctor at Jules Stein Eye Institute at UCLA and really loved it. And that's sort of how I got into ophthalmology.
Wow. And you always are trying to be different than your other fellow surgeons in eye surgery, right? Sounds like it, the way you're creating all of this interesting stuff, right?
You know, I think because there's this really creative component that I have as well as the scientific and rigorous, you know, part two, I can bring the perspective of at least trying to find new solutions, creatively looking at something that other people may look at without the same eye and perspective to try to solve problems in ways that are better for people. And I think when I look back at my career, which I still feel like, you know, my career has got a lot of runway ahead of me, even though I've been practicing for, you know, over 25 years, that I think maybe that's how I can come up with some of these solutions and, you know, just being creative at the same time to help solve problems that don't exist with solutions that don't exist.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very interesting. And you're doing this eye coloring thing that I find very fascinating. I wonder, I don't know how the police and the CIA or whoever feels about it, if they're looking at a brown-eyed person, but How did that come about? Like, why did you decide to do that?
So for years, there have been a few procedures that have been working at changing the color of the eyes. And this is something relatively new because this is purely cosmetic for the most part. And other things that I've done, have medical, motivations for people wanting to get their problems solved. So, but I've been keeping my eye on this area, so to speak, for many years, and I've looked at other types of technologies that have changed the eye color that weren't really safe or up to snuff or were really laborious. And so this type of technology is called keratopigmentation, where basically we're making a little tunnel in the cornea. And it's not so different from what I'm already doing for people that have a condition called keratoconus. I make a tunnel in the cornea there, and I put a little implant to help flatten the bulge for keratoconus. So literally, I've been making tunnels in the cornea for keratoconus for 25 years. So this is a bit of an expansion of that because the tunnel is a wider tunnel and it goes 360 degrees. And then we place a specialized ink in that channel that's made for the cornea. So it's not tattoo ink, it's actually a specialized ink for the cornea. So it's very compatible with being in the cornea. And it actually changes the eye appearance without actually changing the natural iris color. So the iris is still functioning behind it, but this is in the cornea, the outer lens of the eye. And so that's how it changes the eye color because of these types of inks that we can apply. And so there's three types of blues, three variations of blues, and three variations of green, and a honey gold, which is sort of like a honey color. And then in each of those colors, there's three levels of intensity, from high intensity, medium, or low intensity. So some people want like a big impact factor, so to speak, on how their eyes appear, and other people just want it more subtle or in between. So that's how the technology works. And the good news about it is this has been studied in Europe for 15 years. So we have a very good history of this procedure, keratopigmentation, and we now call it color eyes, just so that people understand the type of keratopigmentation that we're doing. And we know that in eyes that are healthy, for example, and don't have keratoconus and essentially are healthy eyes, the procedure is incredibly safe. There have been no infections reported in this group of healthy eyes. And turns out that it's more safe than people buying contact lenses that are colored contacts on the internet.
Oh, wow. Okay, so is this going to revolutionize you? How many people are doing what you're doing?
It's actually, for most ophthalmologists, this is a little bit like does not compute, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm
Because,
already seeing that because,
yeah. And I was
Hollywood will be the
skeptical.
first people that want to do this, right? Especially.
Well, let's first talk about sort of my colleagues. So, when you look at the history of refractive surgery, vision correction, so we had a procedure called PRK that was the precursor to LASIK. It was a surface laser. LASIK is where another technology that had been in existence called keratomelusis, which is flap making and reshaping with the flap. And then these two doctors in Europe added the two together, and that's how we got LASIK. So there was a natural, like a family tree, if you will, on how to get to LASIK. Keratopigmentation doesn't have that sort of precursor, except if you do a lot of intacts for keratoconus like me, it's like, okay, well, we're already making channels and tunnels in the cornea, so this is a natural extension. But most ophthalmologists don't do intacts or implants for keratoconus. So for most ophthalmologists, this is like, whoa, whoa, whoa. This is so like, where is this coming from? Like, we've never done any, seen anything like this before. So, but over time, what I've observed is if procedures are effective and they're safe, then eventually the field will catch up. But it sometimes it can take 5, 10, 15 years, because the mindsets tend to be conservative in medicine in general.
Yeah, so interesting. It's so interesting that people can have that done. I'm not that happy with you about it because my eye color is always been different than a lot of people's eye color. And now people can just go get my eye color anytime they want. Oh,
I'm so sorry, Kim.
I'll think about forgiving you. I'll think about it. So in all that you've done, I mean, because you have helped so many people, and like this eye color, how fun is that? But you've also just served and served and served. And of all of the things that you've done, what would you say you're most proud of?
I really have to say my work with keratoconus, because I was originally in my fellowship, I was trained as a cornea surgeon doing cornea transplants for keratoconus, which are extremely invasive. They have long-term risks like rejection, going blind. People have to be on anti-rejection medications. And so the procedures I've been able to pioneer, and one of them is called a Holcomb C3R cross-linking, where we non-invasively with vitamin solutions and a special light can strengthen the cornea and stop it from getting worse. In the beginning, over 20 years ago, just to give you again the example of how it takes a long time for ophthalmologists to sort of finally agree and adopt something, I had fellow cornea surgeons like discrediting me because my procedure was preventing their patients from needing cornea transplants. So I even gave a TEDx talk about my whole story until my patient, Stephen Holcomb, finally won a gold medal after we treated his keratoconus. And there was so much media coverage because, they took the story of, going from blindness to Olympic gold medal. So it was a pretty massive amount of coverage. But that really shut a lot of the critics down, because now their procedure had an Olympic gold medal behind it. So, and then also Intacs, I mentioned, which are little implants. And we do another procedure called CK for astigmatism with keratoconus. So all those areas in keratoconus is what I'd say I'm most proud of, because these are people who really are being told still to this day by a number of doctors, oh, can't do anything. Just wait till it gets bad enough. You need a cornea transplant, then we'll do a transplant. And they're not even telling them about these other procedures until eventually they do research. And then people, a lot of people discover us just by doing research on the internet. So yeah, of everything we do, I think that's the most I'm proud of, because that's just been helping so many people who are left with no hope when they go to their eye doctor otherwise.
Yeah. You're groundbreaking. And did you talk about those things when you were doing TikTok? About eyes and stuff to this level of surprising people? Is that another part of the thing? You were so out of the box as an eye specialist, eye surgeon?
I definitely have talked about the keratoconus procedures to help educate people on social media, whether it's TikTok or Instagram, YouTube. So yeah, we definitely get the word out. And, our patients have been so gracious, because we have so many Google reviews from keratoconus patients about these procedures. They fly in oftentimes from other states in the US or even other countries. And so when people are searching and then they can read their, feedback directly from somebody who's been through it, patients are also really helping get the message out because of their reviews, and particularly Google reviews. People really read our Google reviews a lot, and it gives a lot of credibility and makes them comfortable.
Where are you located, Brian? Where are you located?
Our office is in Beverly Hills, California.
Okay. Oh, that's where I want to be, is Beverly Hills. Come on now.
Well, the staff are great because they, set people up with really nice hotels right around. Or some people are like, I just want to make like a little vacation out of getting my eyes treated, so they can be by the beach in Santa Monica too. So it's just a great opportunity for people if they want to even just finally, treat themselves to something nice when they come out for the trip.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm kind of curious who's going to play you in the movie. Because the movie Sight is coming out, right, with Dr. Wang, which is fascinating. And so there will be a movie for you, and you're going to have to tell me who's going to play you. But also, your nonprofit helps people who can't afford to come and get the treatment that they need, right? Helps with travel expenses?
Yeah. So when we can, we do try to help people at least be able to make the trip out here. And so that's what that's about. So again, it's just part of my mission of trying to help people. that's why I know why I'm here, basically, on the planet from an early age, is to help people. And I even wrote an article a number of years ago for the Huffington Post that, like, our purpose in life is to do good. And I sort of go through a Socratic, you know, discussion on how do I arrive at that conclusion, you know, with some proof. So I really think we're all here to do good. This is at least my calling.
Have you gotten a lot of good. Oh, yeah.
What was that?
Who's going to play you in your movie?
You know, let me tell you a funny story. So when Stephen Holcomb was competing, and he was off in Europe, you know, in the bobsled World Cup competitions, there in Utah was a school, an elementary school that's a performing arts elementary school. And they write their own plays and musicals for, you know, with the teachers and the parents. And they wrote a whole musical about Stephen and one of his other colleagues, his whole story, because Stephen published a book called But Now I See. And he kind of laid it all out, including his suicide attempt too, when he lost his vision from keratoconus. So Stephen couldn't go. They invited him to go, but he was competing. So I went, you know, flew to Utah, watched the performance by these, you know, young children as a musical and acting. And it was amazing. And there was a little guy with a white coat and glasses who was playing me, which was so surreal and so adorable too, you know, watching somebody playing you, right? And I think you can still probably find that somewhere, maybe on YouTube or somewhere, but they were amazing. So maybe that little guy who played me will be the one if they ever do
something. Okay. Now
later down the road.
Interesting. Are you looking to, Dave, you've written your memoir too, right?
I haven't written a memoir. No,
you need to.
That's coming.
The whole little story. That's next. That's next.
I mean, young to do that.
Yeah.
Not even ever too young. No, not especially with the story and what you've done. Groundbreaking. Do it now so other people are going to be able to follow you and your legacy.
Well, you know, I did actually earlier this year publish a book about my keratoconus experience, about my TEDx talk. Because in a TEDx talk, you only get 18 minutes to tell the story. And there was so much more background, you know, with me and Stephen Holcomb. So I actually wrote a book about the full keratoconus story with the TEDx talk. And that's, if you will, like at least a memoir from my keratoconus journey. And so if people are interested, they can call the office or email or text us. And then, you know, we send the book out for free. So so that's maybe my little keratoconus memoir at this point.
Yeah, but the different things, if you're the first for one of the eye color, come on now. You're too humble. Mr. TikTok sensation, all these different things. And he's like, well, you know, maybe someday a memoir. No, it's time to tell your story soon make it a movie, as Kim said. So those two things are going to happen. Kim, go ahead with your love question. But this is amazing to know this, because when I interviewed him, we're just talking social media and going back and forth about addictions. And he never really bragged about or told me about all his other success. Isn't that interesting? Yeah. You're like the guru in your industry. That's the truth. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Super doctor. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Surgeon. So, Brian, a few years ago, I dedicated a year to figuring out the true meaning of love. And I'll tell you, when I go out to eat, I have a hard time committing to an entree. So to dedicate a year to something was a real stretch for me, mm-hmm. but I did it. And the things that I found out about love just blew my mind and rocked my world, changed my life. And love is just everything everywhere, right? But I'm just curious for you, where does love play a role in what you're doing, in the innovative surgeries that you're doing and the helping people? Where does love play a role?
I would say that love is the foundation for everything that I'm doing. Like, if I didn't love being a doctor and being an ophthalmologist, eye surgeon, I wouldn't do it. So like I'm only going to do things that I really feel passionate about. And I think that's kind of behind love, is there's a passion, there's an emotion, there's a feeling. And so I love being able to change people's lives. And we kind of do that on a daily basis here. That's why my staff really love working here and being a part of this process, because they're helping be a part of changing people's lives too. And they love what they do. And they know that our office is a really special place, because a lot of people in their jobs that don't get that same satisfaction. So I think that's kind of a love is underlying really everything that I do, really.
Absolutely. Where can people that want to get their eye color changed or learn more about you, where can they go?
Probably our website, boxerwalkler.com, is where they'll find all the information for the color eyes, keratopigmentation and keratoconus and all the other procedures that we do too.
Wow. You got to have a waiting list, right? With as popular as you are.
I mean, we're usually booked out a few months, but sometimes people reschedule and some spots and slots open up. So yeah, never know. They can always, you know, ask the staff and they can check and see where the schedule's at.
All right. We appreciate it, Brian. Thanks again.
Good to be with you both.
All right. Thank you, doctor. All right. You're listening and watching the special simulcast of the Neil Haley Show and the Love Is Podcast, guys. Take care.